Well, hi. This is Niles McFlower for Wildlife Is, and I just found out that we have some intro music that actually hasn't gotten in there. For those of you who are familiar with my show as it has been on the broadcast, you probably got confused, but don't worry. We're going to get it next week. And in the meantime, tonight's show, which is on metaphysics and spirituality, is going to be a show that is a little bit, or maybe a lot, a mixture of science, yes, science and spirituality put together. The science is really about cosmology. Some people don't know what that word means, and I hope to, by the end of today, I hope that all of our listeners will get a pretty good idea, have a pretty good idea of what cosmology actually is. Now, cosmology is the study of the cosmos. And what is the cosmos? Well, it's everything. It's all that that's out there, in there, around us, about us, and probably a lot more than you ever expected, especially if you watch things like the Science Channel and other channels on cable that tell you that the universe is blank, blank, or you read books about it in physics, etc. Because I'm going to tell you stuff tonight that's going to kind of like expand your mind. You're going to understand that the cosmos is much, 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 much more than what most of what scientists, who's, you know, who obviously are doing the best they can, presently think, believe, or expound, because, unfortunately, most of science still deals with the universe based upon one part of it only, one part of actually three parts, if you want to call it that, and that is energy. In other words, they think that the entire universe is just a bunch of energy. I don't know how they explain where we come from exactly, but nonetheless, they think that the universe is a bunch of particles, yeah, pieces of energy. Best way to understand it is that way. And somehow this energy, randomly or with some kind of design, creates life and everything else that we are familiar with. And this is most interesting, at least as far as I'm concerned, because in reality, energy is the vehicle or the container that life is in, but it and it's necessary, by the way, because the creator of our universe, God, wants it that way, which kind of makes sense. And again, I hope by the end of today's show, we will know why that is. But the important issue is that a container, just like a glass that holds water, or possibly a container that holds any kind of substance or thing, is not the entire thing. As a matter of fact, it is possibly the least important element in trying to understand what something is, to just know what it is contained within. So this is an important element to perceive, because in reality, if we look at how our universe is put together, well, knowing the container doesn't really tell us that much about what is inside of it. And I hope to describe the container. Yes, I will. And I'm going to describe where the container comes from and where it goes to. Those are things that you can't find out if you look in a physics book. Honestly, you will not find answers to those things. And then, in addition, what is actually inside the container that makes the container both important and a unified element to the inside of it. So in other words, these things are not separate pieces. They are integrated to produce life. Yeah, they produce life, but only when they're integrated and balanced together. If you take away a glass of water, take away the water out of the glass, you would not say any longer that the glass is a container that produces something that has significance. You might say, well, the glass itself has something significant to it, but the water in it is missing, and that would obviously lose a lot of its definition. Same is true with life. If you take what's inside the energy container of things, it loses a lot of its contextual meaning, and concepts about that get lost. And before long, you become a traditional physicist who is looking at all kinds of stuff out there and saying, well, that stuff is really what's important. It's the container, but they don't get it. They miss the point of why the container is there and what it is actually holding. All right. So I hope that very, very short explanation kind of intrigues you a little bit. Yeah, I want to. I want to do that. That's what the show is about. If you would like to participate, hey, I got a great idea. How about giving me a call? You can do so. 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. Let's say you're in Canada. Well, I got another number for you. 888-815-9756. Try that number on, and you'll get through. And if you do want to communicate, please do so anytime during the show, because I'm completely open to that idea. Sounds like a great one. And if you would prefer to email me while I'm on the air, you can do so at thoughts@whylifeis. Someone will give me the message, so to speak. We're still working on that. And me operating the computer, which actually has something in front of me right now that does resemble one. But I don't think it quite gets the messages. But when it does, I'll let you know. In the meantime, they'll run in here and say, hey, there's somebody who has this message, which is great. Now, I'm not I'm not what you would call a computer aficionado. And the reason for it is because I find it's too limiting for the kind of stuff that I love to talk about. So I don't mind if you want to email me. I would prefer, though, that you call, because then we can have a dialogue. And I love dialogues. Dialogues are ways for us to back and forth discuss something. And it's a way for me to get to know you better, too. So, but that's my preference. Now, if you do want to email me, that's okay, too. Someone will run and say, oh, here's an email, and I'll look at it. Now, let's talk about this thing called cosmology, study of everything, the study of everything. If we really are going to be honest about it, and I'm going to try to be as honest with you as I can be, meaning that I don't know everything, but I think I got a pretty good understanding of how the universe works. You say, oh, well, how do you know so much about the universe if all of these physicists seem to have no idea what you're claiming about everything besides the container of things? Then how do you know what's really inside the container? Well, because, you see, I have traveled. Now, what does it mean to travel? That means I've gone. Oh, my! There goes my throat. There's my voice. Try to clear my voice. Okay, I have gone to other dimensions of time and space that are still part of our universe. And by going to these other dimensions of time and space, what I have discovered is this, that the universe is about life itself. It's about the growth of life. And I discovered that the growth of life really has to do a lot with the creator of our universe. In other words, the creator had a purpose in there being life. That's the reason I said why life is makes sense for the name of a show like this, because in that discovery, it seemed like it was an appropriate name. You can see that, you see. So the purpose of life itself was to help grow the creator by being free to do so in its thinking and in its interactions. And interactions meant that it had to have a container that the life was within, so that the container would give every piece of life some way to know about other life. Senses, we call it. some awareness of other life. It was very important. The container provides sense. It provides awareness. It gives life a way to interact, very important, and to communicate. Those are, and communication is a way of interacting, just like I'm communicating with you right now. This was wonderful. It's a wonderful thing, and it's a great idea, and it explains why you have a container and you have life that is within the container. Now, life itself has something that is a little bit different from the container because it has to interact with the container for it to be truly alive, so it has awareness, otherwise it can't interact. But it also has something very, very important. It has thought. It can think. It can, on its own, make choices with a direction to the choices that can eventually create newness to its own field of life. It can make something new for itself, and it can be self-creative. Very important stuff. And in order to do this, you got to have these parts. We'll call it the choices with a direction put together with a container so it can interact and so it can be aware. The awareness then leads to what? Well, it leads to better thinking. And part of the thinking leads to consciousness. What's consciousness? Consciousness is the ability to take information that comes in from the awareness and do some new things with it. Why not? Connect it to everyone and everything else. Make it aware that it is not alone, but part of other things. And eventually, if you're a human being and beyond, that you're part of God. Honestly, you're part of God. This is so important. You get that message as you increase both awareness and eventually consciousness. Oh, now human beings need to do this. Those lower than human beings usually cannot, those parts of life that are lower than humans. So when we talk about plants and animals, well, they're not, for the most part, capable of being aware that they are actually part of their own creator, and they can choose to either participate in this or, hey, let's forget it. I won't do it. No, I'm doing my own way. I'm doing whatever I want. That's all right, too, because we are free to think as we choose to. Now, the lower parts of life, less than human beings, exist as, we'll say, a developmental scheme to eventually reach the point where it will become a part of human life. But as it is right now, those on our planet, those parts of life do not have the ability individually to understand that they're part of their creator. Interestingly, there is a part of them, you could claim, that has a connection to them that does that, but it doesn't exist within the realm that we exist in here. It exists in another part of time and space. And what is that part? It's a soul part, but it's a soul that just ensouls large numbers of plants and animals of the same species, or subspecies in some cases. So it doesn't have an individual consciousness that it can bestow upon one of its species so that a plant is suddenly going to say, I think, therefore I am, and I think, therefore I will create, etc., because it's not individual consciousness. And the wonderful thing about human beings is we have individual consciousness, which permits us to say, I think, therefore, not only am I, but I think there's other things that are doing the same thing, and I think there's a creator that's doing it for everything. That sounds great. Okay, all of this is missing if we look at traditional cosmology. It's all just kind of not there, honestly. Go ahead and read some books on some of the modern ideas of particle physics. And dealing with quantum physics, which is little tiny pieces, particles of physics, and how they react in a very random and silly way, actually, because they do act silly, as you would and I would act silly if we were just containers and we didn't have any thought behind the container. We would look like we're just randomly running around doing stuff. And that's what physicists discover when they look at these silly particles. And they say, oh, well, that's what the universe is about. It's all random and silly. No, it's not. It's just that if you only examine the container, you never figure out what's inside of it. Isn't that something? Oh, I guess you don't have to be a genius to know that, but maybe you have to be a little more conscious to understand there's something greater than that. And I'm going to tell you a lot more when we come back from break, which will be in approximately 2 minutes and 30 seconds from now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
The following statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. ViroPel is a dietary supplement. It is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Colds and flu are a problem that many want answers and alternatives for. Let me tell you about ViroPel, a certified all-organic herbal and nutraceutical formula designed to support relief from symptoms of cold and flu. With so much concern about potential bird flu outbreaks, there may be some help. ViroPel's patents include proven immune enhancement, adding significant preventative and other immune system benefits. In effectiveness trials, most experienced relief from symptoms in 2 to 3 days. Think about how long your last flu symptoms lasted. Incredible and amazing are the words most often used to describe the effects of ViroPel. Using 136 of the highest grade ingredients in a new science gives ViroPel its effectiveness. Relief could be just 1 to 3 days away. To learn more or to purchase ViroPel, call Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. That's 800-777-7850. Or visit ViroPel, that's ViruPel.org.
We're back, and this is Niles McFlower for Why Life Is, and today we're talking about, besides metaphysics and spirituality in general, we're talking about what the entire universe is about, cosmology, the study of this great universe that we exist in, and I hope to expand our minds a bit about what that universe is actually about. Now, I know this sounds presumptuous, and please excuse me if I sound like I lack humility. I really hope that that I don't lack it that much, but I do think I have a pretty good understanding of how the universe works. I'm going to convey that in today's show and in next week's show, because this is Volume 1, and it's going to take really a lot of time to explain the whole thing. And thanks to the station, we're going to be able to go over a bit today. I'm going to actually go over by about 40 minutes from the 55-minute point at the hour. So I'm going to go to 8:35 or so Pacific time. And I happen to be in a time zone right now that is the same as that, even though it's not in California. I'm in Arizona, where they don't have daylight savings time. Nope. So that's okay. So actually, we're on the same time as California during the summer months. And this is a good thing, and I'll tell you why it's such a good thing that we're doing this evening. I don't know that next week that will be possible, because I think there's a show that may be coming online right after us, and we will obviously have to get off when they need to get on. But for tonight, it allows us to go deeper into this subject, which is so difficult, and that prepares us for next week's show, in which case I'm going to go into more particulars and specifics. But today we're going to cover a lot of the generalities. I'm going to explain things about the universe that I think, for those of you who have always wondered about it, this will explain it. And for the those of you who haven't wondered about it, it may open up a new idea, like, wow, I never really thought about that. I really never had an idea that it was actually like that. And this is hopefully going to be great for both of those listeners and in those categories. Now, I was saying before break that I have traveled out of body to other dimensions of time and space. What does that mean? Well, it means that the universe is much, much larger, more complex, more interesting, by the way, than is presently the accepted standard model and even non-standard models of physics as they are proposed, using the idea that the universe is just a container, a bunch of energy, and somehow life comes out of a bunch of energy and makes us and everything else. And this is not true, and what really convinced me of it was in experiments that I eventually somewhat participated in which I myself had some out-of-body experiences, quite a few actually, using first a sensory isolation tank. Oh, it's kind of a fancy word for being in a place where there's no sensation even of gravity. And that allows the mind, consciousness, to wander to another awareness, another body, another container in a different realm to focus through and to realize through that focus in that other realm that that realm even exists. You see, the reason so many of us, including physicists, think this is all there is to the universe, honestly, is because we are so grounded, literally, by gravity and many other senses within this realm, that we are unaware that we actually possess containers, possess senses in additional realms that are more subtle, that actually provide greater levels of information to us, but that are overwhelmed by the information that the body we're in, which is our physical body, is giving us. And so only when people usually die from the physical world, right where we are, and the physical universe, right where we are, do they travel to another part of our universe, but some people might call it a different universe. I don't. It's just a different dimension within our universe called the astral subdimensions. There's a whole bunch of them. And you end up going to one of these subdimensions, sometimes more than one over time, and you live there through an astral body. Now, what does astral mean? Well, think of it as emotions. I don't like the word emotions because it kind of confuses what actually is coming through. What's coming through are astral feelings. Feelings. That's what you get. Now, do we have feelings while we live here? Sure. But most people aren't very aware of them, and they aren't able to use them in anywhere near the same capacity that those who either astral travel or die from this dimension. And guess what? Everybody that I'm talking to, everyone that can hear my voice, and maybe the ones who can't, will eventually, I don't know if it's going to be sooner or later, die and go to the astral subdimensions. And then you're going to say, oh, when that guy used to talk on a radio, or if you came to hear me in person at one of the talks that I give, or whatever, he was right. He was right. I thought he was a crackpot on this station in the wildlife is. No, I'm not a crackpot, honestly. I don't think I am, but I'm a guy who's actually had these experiences. At one time, I was in practice as a psychotherapist. I ran a mental health institute. I did a lot of stuff that was actually pretty traditional stuff. But because I had these out-of-body experiences, I sort of changed my tune. I said, hey, there's more to the universe, a lot more to the universe, than just the physical world, the physical part of it. Unfortunately, physics mostly doesn't recognize that there's any other dimension of time and space except for the physical one. Now, yes, if you're an M-theory, string theory physicist, you might say, well, we know that there are 7, 8, 10 or more other dimensions than this one. Most string theorists today are leaning towards 11 total. But, you know, the interesting thing is those dimensions are almost unusable. It's sort of like there's these dimensions, but there couldn't be anything living in them. So I don't know where that gets you. Now, their dimensions are based upon mathematical constructs that still have to do with containers. It's all about the container. So the string theorists are still running around talking about containers, but they're forgetting about the life that's within the containers, and they're forgetting about thought, which includes choices and consciousness and changes to fields through thought and all kinds of very interesting things that makes life really important, and souls and spirit, which is the thought of our creator itself, and they don't get that. So the problem then is that their theories, even though they have, in a few cases, extra dimensions of time and space, but they're kind of empty. They don't. It's like the container with nothing in them. Well, what good is that going to do? It certainly doesn't explain anything to me. Maybe it does to them. I would love to have some of them on this show as a guest. I've had a few in the past over the last 3 years when I've had the broadcast version of the show. And, you know, the interesting thing is it hasn't really gone very well. Now, when I say gone very well, it's like, you know, I wasn't there. Just like the rest of the universe wasn't there, I wasn't there in being able to talk to them. And this happened once or twice. But it's also happened in private conversations. I would love to have some physicists on this show who are at least open-minded enough to have a real conversation. Because a real conversation means that you listen to both sides and you discuss why or why not this or that may be. And I can even talk a little bit about the math. I'm not a great whiz with math, but I can talk a little bit about it. So I'm not afraid to do that either. No. I don't want to get too far into math because the rest of you out there are going to say, oh, I don't want to hear anything about math. Well, just a little tiny bit would be all right, but not a lot. At any rate, getting back to the whole idea of what is the cosmos really like, it's multidimensional. And besides the astral dimension, which has 7 subdimensions to it, that's a lot, there are an additional 5 major more dimensions that have additional subdimensions of 7 each to those. Add it up, you get 49, including there are 7 actually in the physical dimension. Most people don't know that either. So you have 49 subdimensions, and it gets complicated as all heck. And each subdimension has an effect on the container. Energy itself is affected depending upon where you are in this vast universe of ours. Now let's just stay with the 7 major ones, just so we understand where I'm coming from. 7 major dimensions of time and space. 5 of them have energy containers. Okay. 2 of them, the 2 highest, don't deal with containers at all because the containers have unified so well, so much with the life that they contain that you can no longer discern the container being different from the life itself. Because the beings that live there are omnipotent, omniscient. Yeah, all those things, and omnipresent. Those beings are just so great. Their life has become so great, the container just disappears. You can't even separate the difference. Those beings really have become so one with their creator that we couldn't really understand them. We can gain a little bit of understanding, and in other shows I would be glad to talk about what they're like, because we're all headed in that direction. Eventually, all human beings, all human beings, even the darkest of the dark ones, will eventually reach a point in development. Now, it may take a while, so that they can reach this level where the container and themselves are one, they and their creator are one. A wonderful thing, a tremendous thing. But for us here now, it's pretty far off, because it takes a long time to develop oneself. Remember, life is self-created. To develop oneself to this state of oneness or consciousness. That's what I call it. Oneness and consciousness, you can call them the same thing. So this higher, exalted state of consciousness is very, very difficult to attain for a human being, and it takes a lot of time. That aside, forgetting those great, fantastic dimensions of time and space where energy does not exist, there's still five that energy does exist in. And even in those, there are great beings beyond human that exist that can do amazing things because they use an awareness of such fantastic awareness that their consciousnesses are fantastic. And they, again, are much closer to their creator. They are beyond human. They're superhumans. Some people call them masters. I don't care what you call them. Doesn't matter. They came from us at one time. They were like us. Now, is there a class of beings that aren't human and never will be human that exists within these realms? Yes, there are, as a matter of fact. But even that class eventually connects itself to humans to superhumans, I should say, in some ways. So if we look at the whole thing, human beings are pretty important in the process because we connect life very closely to its creator. We're necessary. As bad as we might be, and I believe me, in this world, we're not doing a great job. But as bad as we might be, being human is a very important part of the life process. I find that intriguing. It's just absolutely fascinating that it is that way. Because in this world, it seems like, boy, if we can just get rid of all the humans, things would be great. You know, I mean, we're so screwing things up. If it gets any worse, there won't be any planet left, and then I guess it won't matter. That's the way it seems, anyway. But it isn't exactly true. It's just that our particular planet at this time is in trouble. Humans on it are having a very difficult time. I will certainly agree with that concept. But we are all destined, even us, especially us, by the way, to achieving great things. Why especially us? Because we as souls, when we are completely in that consciousness, choose to remain here and duke it out, fight it out against the darkness that is around us to try to make this a better world. So all of us really are in many ways advancing ourselves at an accelerated rate. But you wouldn't know it when we're physically alive because we get very illusioned. It's just a tough world, a very tough world to be in. All right, what else do we know about the cosmos? Because that's what today's show is about. Well, because I have so much extra time, I am just filling it in by enriching today's show, telling you little tidbits and things about the cosmos, kind of a teaser, but also going deeper into the subject because I think that this will help. It will help explain why the universe is so much more complex than the way modern physics tries to present it. So when you watch these channels on television or you read a book about cosmology, you're going to be able to smile and say, hey, this book is incomplete. This program is incomplete. They're missing what's inside the container or energy. They're missing that, and you're going to know about that. Isn't that fantastic? All right, so when we come back from break, I am going to try to give you we'll call it a more complete understanding of how the entire universe fits together from A to Z. Because we do have a lot of time. We're going to have almost an entire hour to talk about how it all fits together. And this is going to be, I think, a real eye-opener. Because I'm going to talk something about physics. I'm going to talk a little bit about science. But it won't be so complicated that I hope you, all of you out there, won't be able to follow. I hope you will be able to follow, and it's going to be fascinating. So, let's see, we've got about just a few seconds now before we go to our next break. And then when we come back from that, it's just going to be solid. Let's go and talk about the entire cosmos. How is it put together? Okay, so we will return in 2 minutes and 30 seconds, give or take.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Let me tell you about most supplements that help support joint health, movement, and ease. They usually contain a few helpful substances that work on some people moderately well. For many others, these levels of help are either not enough or are not helpful at all. But there is a product that contains 36 different high-potency and very effective ingredients that support overall joint health, movement, and ease when moving. It's Freedom of Movement by Alternative Health Approaches, and it works in many different ways. This formula is critically balanced to synergistically and dramatically improve joint movement through supportive health, and usually within several hours. The relief generally lasts for an entire day and over time can be permanent. Freedom of Movement comes with a money-back guarantee. Even shipping is refunded for the first bottle. This unique formulation has helped thousands to maintain joint health. The price is $24.95 for a 90-caplet bottle. It's available from Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. Give this powerful all-natural supplement a try if you haven't found relief from other sources. That's Freedom of Movement. Call 800-777-7850.
And we are back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight's show is kind of special because we're getting to go almost an hour over. I'm going to go for until 8:36 or 8:35, excuse me, Pacific time, and that's nearly an hour beyond now, which is fantastic because it gives us the opportunity now to go deeper into this idea of what is the cosmos really like, and I'm going to do this just like I would if I was teaching like almost a science class. But if you want to participate, we have the time to do that. And honestly, I would love it. Give us a call at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 if you happen to be in Canada. If you happen to be in Canada. And let's talk, because that's what it's all about. Now, let me tell you what we're going to start with. The first thing is that the universe is really composed of seven major dimensions of time and space. Now, what is a major dimension? Well, it's kind of like what most people call one of those dimensions right now, which is where we live at the present time in our consciousness in the most dense body you can live in. And we'll call it the physical dimension. I prefer calling it the etheric physical. Some people prefer calling it the electromagnetic physical dimension. And that means that there's two kinds of major containers within this dimension of time and space. The first is a container called matter. Okay, what is matter? Matter is energy that is more not in movement than it is in movement. So the part that we call matter that looks like, oh, this is solid, this is the real thing, is really just energy that isn't moving as much as it is not. It's mostly called inertia. And that's the matter part of the physical universe. But there's another part to it where the energy is more in movement than it is not in movement. And that's called the electromagnetic or etheric part of our universe. And that part is still part of this physical universe that we exist in. It's just that we don't have senses ourselves that very well pick up the etheric part, but we have invented things that do. And guess what? You're using one right now. The entire internet, electromagnetic bands, everything connected together is actually etheric. It's actually this part that we can't sense without using inventions, without using technologies, expansions upon our own senses so that we can pick it up. Yeah, try to hear me if you don't have your computer on. Guess what? You won't. Not unless you're a very unusual person. Now, I know there are a few out there that actually claim they can actually sense the etheric world directly. It's fine. If you can do that, that's fantastic. But for most people, they cannot do that. Honestly, they have no way of doing it whatsoever. All right, so if you don't have any way of doing it, then obviously you have to rely upon technology, and humans do that. Now, some animals and plants do directly have some etheric sense even better than humans. That may surprise you, but they actually do. And so they may pick up some things that we don't in general. That's okay. That's all right. They don't have the technology, though. You see, they're still not able to pick me up the way you are right now. And so that's part of our development, is to use the lower kingdoms in some ways, because we're using the mineral kingdom right now for the most part, to expand our horizons and be able to pick up some of and understand some of the electromagnetic part of our universe. And particularly astrophysicists. Now, those are the people who are really looking for things way out beyond Earth, are using these technologies, to discover the electromagnetic parts of the physical universe so they can explain, they think, how the cosmos works. But again, the only thing they seem to notice are the containers that are electromagnetic. They aren't aware of the life that's within those containers. And so they come to some very strange conclusions about what the cosmos is like, because they say it's only the physical universe with this electromagnetic part, and it's only about the containers. It's all about energy. Well, it isn't, because life, when it is within the electromagnetic energies, is capable of doing amazing things, even though the life itself goes way beyond, in its own expression, way beyond the electromagnetic and matter or physical part of the entire universe. So life spreads itself into other dimensions of time and space. The minimum, just so you know, that human life expands itself into is three dimensions of time and space. Astral and physical life is confined mostly to the animal realm, and plant life is mostly confined to the etheric and physical, with only a slight, very slight amount of astral connection. Mineral, which is pre-life, it isn't life, really. It's pre-life. It's going to be life someday, but it's not really life. Mineral is exclusively etheric and physical in its ability to, we'll say, pick up some sense, some awareness of its environment. You might say, well, how can a mineral sense anything? Well, we call it electrochemical responses. And believe it or not, molecules running around sense things all the time. We just don't recognize that, and that's too bad. But they aren't alive because they can't think. And even the part of them that does think, which we could call a soul part, is so primitive that it can think only at the most very basic levels. And the responses that we see are very, very repetitious and consistent, but unfortunately not very creative. In order for a mineral to become creative, it requires something that is alive, like a plant or an animal, and particularly a human, to take it and make it into a computer, or take it and make it into a type of body that life is going to need and use. You see how it works? Very interesting stuff. Okay, so there is, and please stay with me on this, there is, therefore, much more than the physical dimension to time and space. Much, much more. It's fascinating how much more there is. And when we leave, so to speak, or we add to the physical dimension with its electromagnetic components, we add more to sense. Not less. We don't lose sense. We gain more to sense because each dimension is more complex, has more elements of dimensionality to it than the one that is below it. We are in a dimension where we call it having, or say it has three parts. What are those three parts? Height, width, and depth, right? Everybody knows that. Our universe, we think, has height, width, and depth. So when we look out, as an astrophysicist might, we say, well, something is, it's either this direction or that distance away from us, right? And by using three axes, height, width, and depth, we supposedly can say where something is. But the interesting thing about that is the most limited ways to understand where something is and how it is, and it only applies to the etheric physical part of the universe. You go to the astral dimension, and listen to this. There's another dimension. There's a whole other dimension to time and space. It's about what direction energy is moving in as it is directed by thought and what speed it's moving at. Because the thought is directing energy and it's getting it to move at a certain speed. And you could say, well, how come that isn't happening in our dimension? And it's very, very simple. The container is so strong that the thought, the life that is in the container in our dimension, has very little effect on the containers themselves. And so it has very little effect on energy. And thought has almost no effect on energy. Only in the most smallest of ways can we notice this. And actually, it has been proven that it exists. There's a guy named Heisenberg. There was a guy named Heisenberg, yeah, back in the 1920s, who was a physicist. And he was into the beginnings of what is called quantum physics. And this guy, Heisenberg, decided to do some experiments with some other people who worked with him. And those experiments were to see whether or not energy, at even the smallest levels, called photons, would follow thought. Because there was some indication that energy might actually follow thought if there was a small enough amount of energy. It had to be a very, 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 very tiny amount so that the energy itself could be determined to be following thought, because anything than the smallest amount, and you couldn't see this effect. So what did he do? Well, he ran some experiments. And when the thought that was being proposed tried to get these photons to move in a certain way so that they acted like a wave, you know what waves look like? They kind of go up and down and flow in a certain direction. If the thought itself was saying, gee, it would be nice if this stuff acted as a wave, sure enough, the photons acted like waves. They did. And when other people were instructed to think of the photons as acting as little particles, not waves. Particles don't go up and down and flow. Particles have a specific interactive mode with other particles, and instead of kind of flowing in a direction back and forth, they just zip in one direction only, and they don't go up and down. They don't have this kind of wavy kind of consistency. And sure enough, when people thought of particles, photons doing this, they did. Yep, they did. And suddenly, Heisenberg proved that photons, very, very small amounts of energy, could be changed by the thought that was trying to observe them and, in fact, control them. And this is an amazing discovery. Unfortunately, it's been overlooked too much by physicists today. And it was amazing because it showed something that is so commonplace in the astral dimension of time and space. Well, what is that? It's that if you can change the physics to the way it is in the astral world, thought tremendously controls energy, where it, at a very, very, very small amount in minimum level, it controls it in our part, where we're living right now, of time and space. Because in the astral dimension, a new dimension is added. The dimension has to do with the direction and speed of energy itself. And when you add this other dimension, thought has a much more profound effect on all kinds of energy. Even large, vast amounts of energy are controlled by thought. Not just tiny, 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 miniature little things called photons, which are very, very small. I mean, a photon is smaller, way smaller than an atom. A photon is something that comes out of an atom when you excite some of the electrons that are on the outer part of the atom. And this amazing thing is a very important understanding. Now, Heisenberg actually came up with an amount for how much energy controlled thought. He and some other people came up with this amount, and it was called the quantum constant. It's the amount of energy controlled thought here, but the amount that energy controls thought in the astral world is huge compared to here. So this thing called the quantum constant suddenly became huge itself. And the quantum constant is part of something called the alpha constant, which really controls all of physics. So what I'm telling you is all of physics completely changes and is different in the astral dimension than it is here, because the astral dimension has a whole other part of dimensionality to it, which allows energy to follow thought tremendously more so, and it changes all of space and time. Wow. And for those of you who said, what did he say? I thought he said this wasn't going to be too much physics and stuff. Well, yeah, look, I can't talk about telling you how the cosmos works if I don't throw a little bit of physics in here. Look, I'm keeping all the math out. I can tell you numbers if you really want to get confused. Confuses me to talk about the numbers. But I can give you numbers. I can tell you quantitatively how much and why and how certain things called sigma are changing, and besides alpha, and I can give you all kinds of stuff. Yeah, but it doesn't matter, because it's about the concepts tonight. It's really about what is really going on out there and how is the cosmos so much different than what we think it is. And that's what I'm here to tell you about. You might say, okay, well, you talked about sub-dimensions. What are the seven sub-dimensions to the astral world, and how do they vary? What is that about? Well, this thing called the quantum constant is not even constant among the entire dimension of time and space. It's so unconstant, or inconstant. I think inconstant is the right word. Well, who knows? It's so inconstant that it changes from one part of the dimension to another. Talk about us being unknowing. We have no clue, do we? So, and it's especially true in the astral world, you can see this. Here it's very difficult to identify this effect. It was actually about 10 years ago or so, a physicist in Germany discovered that in the electromagnetic part of our dimension here, the physical dimension, there is a difference in the quantum constant, in effect, from the electromagnetic parts of our dimension to the matter or physical parts. He actually discovered this, and he discovered that the speed of light is at least 1.7 or more times faster. All kinds of strange things he discovered. And this, by the way, was on a program, a Nova, of all places, PBS. Yeah. But nobody's watching. It's like, well, who cares if that many people are aware of it or not? Because they can't put two and two together to figure out what this really means. Okay, so in the astral world now, the amount that energy is falling apart is so vast that you end up with great differences from one part of the astral dimension to another. And there actually are seven different parts. You might say, well, how come there's seven? Where does that number come from? Did somebody just invent seven as being an interesting number? Or is it... Well, it's because there are seven major dimensions. Each major dimension has an effect on the container of energy itself. It actually makes seven different kinds of energies that follow thought in seven different ways. So there are seven sub-dimensions in every major dimension. That's it. And sometimes they're called ray energies, and it's all kinds of fancy words, but it's all about how much is energy actually following thought any in one way. Different kinds of thought have different collections of energy that follow it better than other kinds of energy, if you're following what I'm saying. And therefore, there are seven major kinds of thinking, and there are seven major kinds of energies. And there are seven senses and seven chakras that help create these senses in human beings. Oh, you say, wait a second, now that's kind of fitting together, isn't it? Yes, that's right. And what are those seven senses? Well, they're the five most people call form senses. You know, like, oh, I can taste something, I can smell something, I can feel something, touch it, you know. I can hear, I can see. Oh, those are the five, okay. But what about the other two? Well, the other two deal with the sense of spirit. Our heart chakra can sense, become an understanding of our own creator. And our crown chakra, some of you have heard that name before, crown chakra, that's the one above your head, that chakra can sense how to create more of our creator in ourselves and in others. Put them together, you got seven senses. We got seven senses and seven centers or chakras. So if you've heard those words before, and a lot of the listeners to this station I'm sure have, then that's where it all fits together. And we have seven senses, being human beings, in each of the three bodies that all humans have. We have a physical body, which includes an electromagnetic part. We have an astral body, and we have a manasic or mental body. That doesn't mean that our mental body is running around just thinking, because all you can think in all these bodies, and it just has to do with the nature of the energy. The nature of the energy and the dimensionality itself. I'll get to the mental in a few minutes, believe me. All right, so we have seven subdimensions to the astral dimension itself. Are you still with me on this? I know it's complicated. But hey, you know, within that complication, there's amazing simplicity. And there is an explanation, finally, for how the universe works. Without this, believe me, you can read every book. You can spend all of your days trying to understand the universe just by looking at containers and energy, and you're not going to understand how the universe works. That's the truth. And science won't understand it either. They're getting more confused. I don't know if you've been, the last 10 years particularly, things have gone from, well, everybody understands how the universe works. It's about all these energies, to... Nobody understands how the universe works. It's about we don't know what. We're going to invent new energies. We'll call it dark matter. We'll call it dark energy. We'll call it this or that. And it's lost. People in that, they're just looking at the containers and they're lost. Okay. So we know that in the astral subdimensions, energy follows thought in different ways. Now, from the lowest part, the lowest being the one that is least complicated part of the astral subdimensions, to the most complicated, there's a significant difference in the way that people think. And the difference has to do with the nature of what direction the energy is moving in and what speed it is. Now, let me try to explain that, because a lot of people want to know about the astral dimension. I know that's a big deal. Okay, I'll try to explain it as best as I can without getting too mathematical or too scientific. In the lowest part, the very lowest part of the astral dimension, people think in a very singular and selfish way. The energy is all about how it affects themselves. So the direction of the energy is all about how it does affect me. And that's where we'll call it the baseline is of that dimension. That's the lowest a person can think in. Now, other things think that way too besides human beings. So we have some animals that can exist there. Even a few plants with the most minor amount of thought exist there. Interesting thing is when an animal or plant is thinking there, they don't represent as much of it being about themselves in a very individual sense. It's more about themselves in a more general, we'll call it whole species sense. But when humans think in these lower dimensions, it's about themselves individually, because we are much more individuals. And when someone thinks very individually, the process can become terribly selfish, terribly so. And so people that are, we'll say, caught in their own self-focus and selfishness tend to relegate themselves, tend to make it so that they exist in the lower parts of the astral subdimensions, especially the very lowest, which is sometimes called the seventh subworld. And here in this world, simplicity itself, because the person is usually using only one of their chakras at a time to gain information. Talk about really separating those chakras, and with an overemphasis of the chakra that is referred to by some people, the seventh or sexual chakra, the lowest chakra. And this chakra tends to give them a very limited sense of themselves and others. And it makes it seem to them that others are there for their sensual enjoyment. Others being everything, not just other people, but everything is out there for how can they enjoy and control. Control is a big, big part of this. Control the energy that is around them. They find it most important that they enjoy and get the most sensation from those things that they control. Honestly. Well, that is not the greatest place that any of us, I think, really want to go to. Some of us will, when we die, end up there. If for no other reason, because we lived that way while we were physically alive. Now, if you live in this way, and if you're very selfish, and you're into controlling others, and you want to have what you want to have, and you see others as objects, containers, honestly, containers. If you see everything around you as a container that you can control and possess, have for your own, guess where you're going to be? You're going to be in the astral subdimension of the seventh subplane or world. Some people call it the seventh world. Okay, fine. And the very, really dark ones are people who want to destroy the life within the container, actually want to destroy the growth of God within the container, but still want to possess the container. Those are called evil people. And they exist in a part of the seventh subworld. It's called the eighth sphere. And it's really still part of the seventh subworld, but it's so strange that actually because they actually want to, instead of increase life, they want to destroy it. they are going so far against God that they actually create their own, like, little mini subversion or subworld within the subworld. They have their own place where they like to hang out. That's what some people might refer to as hell. I don't think so, because they can leave it at any time if they just change their thinking. Since energy follows thought, they don't have to be confined to such a limited position. But that's where people go. Now, you start looking at this and you say to yourself, wow, this whole thing starts making some sense. I want you to follow with me, because I'm not going to tell you about, I'm not going to go through every subdimension, et cetera, that's for another show. But I want you to see, just in this one example, what I saw in first visiting the astral world and why I changed from being an atheist, truly, to one who really believes in God. Because this system actually makes sense. It makes sense because those that are self-creating, which is all life, are choosing to make it so they exist within dimensionalities that either are self-confining and limiting, or that are expansive of consciousness and grow more of all life. And it's all based in a relative way upon how we choose to think and therefore create ourselves. The container follows our thought over time. In this dimension of time and space, our containers grow old, they get feeble and sick, because we are too selfish. We're in illusion a lot of the time. The same thing actually happens in the lower subworlds of the astral plane. People grow older, etc. They live longer there because of a thing called time dilation, because time grows, and the amount of time a person has increases as dimensionality increases. This is all part of that great alpha constant thing. And there's a mathematical formula for it, but we don't need to know about that. We just need to know that when we die from here, we're going to live a lot longer, like hundreds of years in the astral world. How long? It depends what subworld you go to. The more conscious a person is, and the more that their focus is out towards others, directing the energy around them to go out towards others instead of staying in their body and fouling up their body and screwing up their astral body so their senses diminish. But the more that they're focused out, the longer they live and the more time they live in. They actually have more time to live in. It's hard to understand that concept about time, I know. It's called time dilation. I talked about it last week and I've talked about it before. And so it's a fascinating subject because even time itself is changing. Time and space are interconnected. The closer you are to everything else, the more time you have. Because the more you speed up your own atomic structure, the more you're capable of communicating and interacting with everything around you at greater levels within the same period of time, making time in a relative sense, allowing you to have more time. It's a vastly significant subject. All right. Well, so just getting into this idea about the astral subdimensions, it's fascinating, isn't it? That means that what we call our universe is surrounded, literally, by a greater universe, but it's still part of our universe. That is another dimension, adds another dimension of time and space we call the astral dimension. And beyond the astral dimension is a dimension called the mental or monastic dimension. Just means mental. And that dimension adds another dimension of time and space, just like the last one. And so you just keep adding time and space dimensions. Now, what do you add? The last one we added, the speed and direction of energy became a dimension in itself. But when you reach the mental dimension, time itself becomes a dimension, meaning you could live in the past of time. You can actually enter the past of your own time, and you can relive over and over again that past. You can also live in a projected future, like virtual reality or realities. And people can live out parts of whole lifetimes of potential future reincarnations or incarnations. yeah, amazing things can be done because the mind is controlling energy at a much greater level. Now, that level includes the past, present, and future rather than just the speed and direction of the energy. It's not that the speed and direction go away. It's that now you're adding the three parts of time. Wow. Amazing. Yeah. And the mental dimension, sort of like the etheric physical, is kind of split. And that's due to the selfishness of human beings. We're a bit selfish, and we tend to cause these splits. Now, you might say to yourself, what does it mean to cause splits? It means that when we think too closely, when we think too much of ourselves, some of the dimensionality that we enjoy through having awareness is actually an obstruction to further sense. We're actually blocking out some of our sense, and it actually has an effect on the dimension itself, because our body is part of that dimension, and it actually adversely affects the entire dimension when a lot of people think very selfishly. And that's what happens in the mental dimension. It actually splits the dimension into two different parts. One part has to do with the future part of time, and it's the causes of things. And the other part deals with the past part of time, which is the effects of things. And when we first go to the mental dimension, the lowest parts of it are really about the effects. We get caught into more of the effects of things, and we deal a lot more with the past elements of time. Whereas when we gradually develop ourselves in becoming more and more unselfish, like our soul, we eventually live more about the future, which includes then the present and the past, is in our understandings, our consciousness of time itself. And that's where souls live, our own soul, where we're all headed back to, by the way. As we die through these dimensions in time and space and give up bodies, we're just going back to live as our soul. And we join our soul in full consciousness and recognize, oh, I forgot, I am the soul. We're like clones here, and we're illusion clones. But when we get back to that point, we say, oh, here I am. It's been me all along. And we can remember that we have been a soul and what the soul has been doing while part of us was lost in time and space, confined to narrow parts of it, and in great illusion because our senses were so inaccurately working due to our self-focus. Souls are very unself-focused, very, very loving, very, very conscious. And in doing so, they join the time and space in the mental world so the causes and effects can come together. They can see the cause of almost every effect. Almost every, not all, because they're not fully developed. But they can see a tremendous amount more causes for all the effects than we can here by far. We're lost in a sea of effects with almost no understanding of the causes here. That's the reason that so many physicists are running around thinking that energy and containers are the creation of everything. And that's like you couldn't be any more screwed up than that, because in reality, the main part of what really makes things important is what's in the container. But they don't see that because they can't connect the causes and the effects together. They lack consciousness. You got to have really big consciousness to put most of the effects with causes. And so you see why things are really happening the way they are. Souls can do that because they exist in the higher mental world. They don't exist at the very highest point because human souls are still kind of confined to a very narrow region in the higher mental world. They have to develop themselves into freed souls that exist in another dimension of time and space entirely, called the Buddhic world, or some people call it the intuitional subworlds. Very different than the three that I just described. The intuitional world kind of adds another dimension of time and space. Yeah, it's a state of omniscience, where knowledge itself is instantly shared between the senses of all life that exists within that realm. Knowledge itself is shared between all life. It's like you have the senses of all other beings connected to you, but you still have individual consciousness. You don't have like a group soul. You are an individual soul, but you're still able to sense what others are sensing and creating knowledge out of. You gain that knowledge. You become omniscient. That means all-knowing. Well, of course you'd be all-knowing if you had the senses of what other people are sensing, and they, you even could go beyond that. You know what knowledge they're creating from their senses, and you share that. Well, that's what members of the next kingdom beyond humans do. That's how you can define them. Amazing? Yeah. And we're all headed there. We are. Not until we master the lower three worlds, master them, and that's the reason those beings that can do that in the intuitional world by this added dimension to it and the added sense of connection with all other beings in knowledge are doing, they're called masters because they've mastered the lower three worlds that humans have not mastered. That's the only reason they're called masters. I know that some people may think otherwise, and I've heard reasons why other people call whatever they call people that are beyond human, call them. But I'm telling you the actual reason comes from mastering the lower three worlds, and humans have not done so. And so now we have covered four of the seven dimensions of time and space that compose our cosmos. And we're starting to expand our consciousness, I hope, and getting to another state of being. Whoa. Another state. Another place. Someplace beyond where we are. But someplace that explains so much more about how the universe and why the universe works. I hope this is fitting together for you. I know it's still hodgepodge and very fast to talk about these vast subjects, but it should open us up to the idea that life is something fantastic, way more fantastic than just the container, than the energy which helps life to interact. I find that fascinating, but it isn't really what it's cracked up to be. I mean, I could know about every container, every energy ever around, and it would be relatively boring. Now we're getting into some of the big, juicy stuff, finding out that life can really go way beyond human life by adding the dimensionality in the intuitional or Buddhic realm of being all-knowing. And we're all-knowing because we share the knowledge that all other beings have at and below our level of consciousness. Whoa, isn't that something? Wouldn't we all like to be that way? Well, what does it take to do that? Since energy is following thought at greater and greater levels in all of these dimensions, because we're adding dimension to each of the dimensions, what happens is this. The causes and effects at the top of the monastic world, the mental world, all come together. So every cause, we know the cause of every effect in existence once we attain what is known as enlightenment in the mental world. Then at that point, we can jump over into this added dimension of connected causes and effects to everything. That means every effect is instantaneously understood to its cause. And all the connections are right there at our fingertips. And we share this with all other beings at and below our level of consciousness. Well, at and above our level of consciousness as far as what we share. What we can communicate and what we can understand is at and below, but we share it at and above. So the amazing thing is that it is through the sharing process of all of our knowledge, because our senses are moving at the speed of light of the intuitional realm, which is very, very fast, by the way. It's 140,000 times faster than it is here in this dimension of time and space. You think light is fast. Think about 140,000 times faster than that. That's what's going on. And we're sharing this omniscience And once we start sharing the omniscience, we actually end up reaching a point where we have enlightenment about one-third of what God is. One-third. Because we become enlightened in every way that we can about containers. We know and understand all there is to know and understand about all the containers in the entire universe. Not just the physical, not just the astral, not the mental, the entire universe. That's what it means to have Buddha consciousness. But it's still only a third of being fully in consciousness what our Creator is. Yet it's an amazing state, and it's beyond human. It's levels of masterhood. It's levels of being superhuman. A fantastic thing. And in this other realm, there's still energy, because energy goes all the way up to the next dimension of time and space. But it's so amazing that even when we first get there, we have reached this remarkable state of understanding everything there is to understand about energy and the containers of life. So we understand everything there is to know about awareness, about sense itself. We understand everything, how everything in the universe senses. That's what intuitional and full intuitional awareness is. There are seven subcategories to it. They're called the seven different states of Buddhi. But even at the lowest state, you still understand amazing amounts. You can understand how even the lowest things sense and interconnect. You don't understand the highest things because you've got to have the highest state of Buddhi for that. But still, amazing stuff. That's what you reach to. And that dimension of time and space is called, again, the Buddhic realm or Buddhic subworlds. And it completely surrounds and interpenetrates our dimension. Now, can we sense it? Well, you got to have Buddhic sense. And human beings have very, very, very limited Buddhic sense. In order to develop Buddhic sense, your focus has to be 100% out towards others in a controlled way. So you have to be able to do it. You say, well, right now I'm going to be focused in this way to help others to understand in this way, 100%. 100% focused on. Well, not so easy to do. So difficult to do that very few humans ever do it, but those that are doing it are creating themselves into superhuman beings, or masters, whatever you want to call it. And they are actually attaining varying levels of states of Buddhi, or Buddhic consciousness, and they are gradually climbing into this realm of seven sub-dimensions of intuitional consciousness. Intuition, interesting, is really something that could be explained this way. Intuition is the ability to, without any time delay, being able to determine the causes of any effect and all effects, regardless of the complexity of those effects. So you know all the causes. That's intuition. Instantly. No time used at all. In the mental world, you're always separating some cause from some effect and having to work back to, from the effect to the cause, using up a lot of time. So intuitional thought is extremely fast compared to any type of mental thought. But this is controlled intuitional thought. It's not the intuition a lot of people say they have a brief moment of intuition. This is something where you turn it on and off just the way you turn on and off your mental thought. It's no different than that capability in many respects. Fascinating stuff. Absolutely. All right. What's beyond that? There are still more dimensions. We've only hit 4 or 7 so far. But they're getting pretty big. We keep adding more stuff to this. It's getting pretty big. Well, the next dimension, sometimes referred to, is just a spiritual dimension. Some people call it the atmic dimension. Some people call it nirvana. I don't care what you call it. What happens there? Well, instead of just being able to sense what others have in terms of knowledge, because obviously that's an important thing. That's what happened in the Buddha dimension. Does it reach the Atmic dimension? Can not only understand the containers of all life, they can instantly change those containers if they so choose. You are now omnipotent. That means all-powerful. Wow. So you went from being all-knowing, omniscient, in the Buddhic realm, to becoming omnipotent when you reach the Atmic or spiritual dimension of time and space. It's the last dimension that deals with containers at all. And once you get to that dimension, you don't like the containers of this life or that life, you can change it. The great responsibility, though, comes with those who live in this consciousness, because they can change life itself at just a flick of their foot. And they don't do so willy-nilly. They do so by being so connected to God that they can see what God needs and wants within a certain planet, and they help to develop that planet by creating certain conditions that we would call evolutionary in some respects, in some kinds of life, in spiritual and others, that automatically changes the way life will grow in terms of its containers or bodies and senses. Wow. That's true omnipotence, isn't it? It truly is all-powerful. That within a specific planet, this can be done. Eventually, when you reach the very highest levels of the Atmic realm, you could do it in whole solar systems and beyond. Fantastic. Now, is that godlike? Yeah. You would certainly call these beings pretty far beyond human. They are beyond what most people even construe to be masters, although sometimes they're still referred to as that way. These are the really, really advanced beings. They have controlling interest in planets, and sometimes multiple planets. They have responsibility to help life develop, and they also are the creators of how that life is going to do so. They are involved in both evolutionary and spiritual means of development of life, both. It isn't that there's anything wrong with evolution. It's just that evolution, when you only apply containers to it, makes no sense. But when you start including the spiritual side, the whole thing fits together, and you suddenly say, oh, well, I can understand. These are Atmic beings working with evolution and changing the environment of the planet in very basic ways, including its internal development, its external, changing when a comet hits or when this, that, asteroid, making the planet into something totally different with just a thought. And they can do that. Whoa. Now, obviously you don't have a whole bunch of them collectively coming together and making some kind of compromise about the way the planet works. Usually you have beings that are so connected together in consciousness that there is no argument or disagreement, because they're working in a plan according to God. They actually know like two-thirds of God's own mind. They don't know everything. They really don't, because I'm going to get to the last levels here. The last levels are containerless. Remember those highest two levels of our universe? They don't have containers anymore. And what do the beings do who don't have containers anymore? Well, this is going to shock you. They actually live through what God is doing in the universe itself. They get to experience God's own experience. First, they do so by becoming aware of life everywhere, not just on a planet or a solar system, but everywhere, and sensing what that life senses. And eventually, they do so not in just the present, but they do it in the past. And they eventually do it projecting out at their particular level of time and space all the way into a virtual future until the universe is, as we understand it, complete. What does that mean, complete? It means that all life has developed itself to the same level that they are at. It's beyond our comprehension. It's beyond our comprehension to understand this. What are those two dimensions called? One's called, by some standards, the dimension of one, or the monadic dimension. And the other one is called the dimension of a D, or some people call it the divine dimension, or some people call it the dimension of logos, or logoic dimension. Doesn't really matter what you call it. These are dimensions where there's no more containers, because the container and the being have become one with everything. They experience their own creator's growth, and they even go beyond the point where that creator is at the present time and extrapolate a virtual reality of universal future. Now, it's not going to be the real future that God in itself will experience. It experiences every being going through this. And, of course, those beings that haven't done it yet can't contribute to it in any real sense to those that are doing it at the time. So each being that experiences this does not experience the same fullness that God does, but it still experiences a tremendous virtual future right to the supposed end of how the universe could be. An amazing experience. All beings that leave our universe do so through this one method of living through the past and the present and a projected future from their reality, from their sense of reality, of God itself. Then they go to another universe. Honestly, another universe. This is like the bottom basement universe of types of universe. It's called the physical type of universe. And there's other universes that are much more complex, much more interesting. But this one is pretty far out, believe me. Now, what has happened? Dimensionality has increased to these incredible levels. Time and space have increased to the point of all time and all space, by the way. Time and space have joined together. And so a being lives through all past, present, and future for all life in that universe, in our universe. And that's the very height of development of life for this universe. And you see how I'm bringing life and containers and energy together. Of course, energy ceases to exist separate from life once you get beyond the atomic. But it doesn't matter. It's still there. It's just there in a new way that is representative of God itself. We now discover what God is. God is the three parts that it chose to separate itself into. It's the two parts of its own thought, which is choices, along with consciousness, or direction to those choices, joined with the container, or joined with some types of energy that make senses and bodies. And when we go to the fullness of all these dimensions, we discover that's exactly what we experience. That's what the whole cosmos is like. That's the entire picture. Now, there are many things to explain about this cosmos as it fits in with present physics and why we don't yet have an understanding, etc. And I would like to cover that next week's show, and we will. But I gave you the general groundwork in today's show, a better picture, you might say, of a much wider and more universally understood universe, a universe that makes a lot more sense than a bunch of containers that contain, apparently, nothing. Okay. So, and we can see that the containers are getting very big, because eventually the container becomes the entire universe itself and God itself for those beings reaching that level. I hope you understood that. Well, until next week, I hope that all of us, well, I do have a couple of announcements. I guess I can say one or two of them. On June 4th, I'm going to be over at Glendale Borders and talking about the beginning of human life. And on June 7th, I'll be talking about supernatural powers. Oh, what's that about? And both times from 7 to 8:15. So if you're in the Phoenix metropolitan area, come and visit me. Please do. And I got those squeezed in. I'm a few seconds over here. But I got those squeezed in so that you know where I'm going to be if you happen to be running around and doing that. And until we meet again, be it at one of these meetings or next week, keep thinking about and understanding more about our wonderful cosmos and universe we live in. And next week we'll go into greater details about some of the interconnections between science and what I've explained to you tonight. And this has been Niles McFlower, again, for Why Life Is.